Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, March 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. So you're driving along, and suddenly you just hear a faint clunk, 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 clunk. And your check engine light goes on. Now you have two options. One, you turn the stereo up as loudly as it'll go, and you drive on. Two, you take careful note, and you get the thing fixed. Now, to be fair, I always do the former, and that's why I've owned about 37 cars. But you're smarter than that, and you're lucky, because today Gordon Fricke is back with automotive repair and maintenance. And if you have a question about your car or truck, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Always a popular show when Gordon is here. You can email us as well. voxpop@wamc.org. Cars. Gordon Fricke coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On the line today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions, none other than Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. It's an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. If you have a question, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org, but it's a call-in show, and the number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back. How are you, buddy?
Hi, Ray. I'm doing great. How about you?
You sent me a funny text before the show started saying, oh, boy, my engine and transmission guy came in, and there are a lot more reasons to keep your oil changed earlier rather than later. That just sends a shiver through my soul because I always let it go about 1,000 miles too long. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, that's interesting you say that. There's a shop nearby, older guy, a lot of experience, pretty wise individual, and he's into psychology, which that has a lot to do with businesses like ours and others that he used to put on the sticker when to come in for your next oil change. Let's say he'd put 3,000 miles or 4,000 miles.
Yeah.
And he said, I stopped doing that. Now I put 3,000 miles because then people usually come in around 4,000 or 4,500. And I thought, well, is he really right? And he is. I mean, that's just the way it works.
That's,
you know,
exactly what I do with my vehicle.
Yeah,
with my wife's vehicle, not so much. You know, we take that one seriously. Mine is a heap, as you well know.
Well, it's not a bad heap, though, you know?
So anyway,
yes,
go ahead.
Yeah, so the engine and the transmission rep comes in, very, very large company, biggest in the U.S. So these guys encounter everything. They get engines that are worn out, broken, blown up, seized, or whatever, and they're major remanufacturers. So they see why this stuff comes back, and they fix it and make improvements. And every time the guy comes in, we have a conversation about the major causes, and it is infrequent oil changes, oil debris, oil sludge, and big amounts of carbon in the oil that didn't used to get there that heavily years ago because of the way today's engines are designed. The combustion chambers are hotter. They're way hotter. They're about 1,400 degrees, and that converts more of the oil to carbon. The carbon gets mixed in with the oil. It's floating around with it the whole time. The oil filter can only remove certain amounts of particles. So you've got super, super contaminated oil. And as we've spoke about for the last 10 years, there's pressure to keep the oil in the engine crankcases as long as possible due to environmental concerns. And we all get that 100%. What's happening is it's staying in too long, and engines are failing and getting ruined and worn out too fast. So the underlying recommendation from all the manufacturers and all the specialists is to change the oil between 3,000 and 5,000 miles in most cars.
I mean, don't you think that those who design these vehicles and these higher compression and higher temperature engines understand what they're doing and is it planned obsolescence in these vehicles?
I think it's the engineer. The engineer's goal is to build the best thing he can, but he's under the gun with the finance department, the sales department, corporate, shareholders, competition from everybody else. So their best ideas have to get altered quite drastically at times. And one of the consequences is great designs, great technology, but there's so many other things that come into play now.
Let's grab a couple of calls before our first break here. Gordon Fricke is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Jeff in Gilderland, you've been waiting a while. You're on. Go.
Thank you so much.
You
I appreciate
bet.
It.
Sure.
Hi there, Gordon. I have a 2000 Honda Civic Si, and I've got problems with the driver's or the passenger side window won't go up and down at all, and the sunroof opens but won't close. I've checked the fuses under the dashboard, and I've checked the fuses under the hood. They all seem to be good. So I'm looking for a theory.
I don't think you have a common denominator between the sunroof not closing and that passenger window. If you could gain access to a wiring diagram, you would be able to follow all the wires and see. But the sunroof, so it opened, but now you can't get it to close.
Yeah, I have to close it manually.
What does it make sounds when you're trying to shut it with the switch, or is it dead silent?
It's dead silent.
Okay, so the situation with the roof could be the switch, because the motor, if the motor can operate open, it can operate closed, because all they do is reverse the polarity to the motor to make it shut. So you might have a switching issue. The switch itself could be the problem with the sunroof, unless it's binding. But if you're closing it manually and it feels okay, I would be concerned about maybe the sunroof switch. Going to the passenger door,
okay, that makes sense.
Passenger window, so no sound from the door when you try to operate the switch either in the up or down position. Do you hear anything in the door trying to make noise or operate?
I don't hear a sound.
Okay. So that could be a dead motor, but it could also be a switching issue. And what we have found in a lot of cars, and it's usually the driver's door before the passenger door, but where the wires run from the door to the body of the car, where the hinges are, after thousands of open and shut action, sometimes it'll break a wire inside that harness, and that wire could be the one that operates your window. So that's pretty easy to check that rubber boot to see if those wires are all perfectly intact in there. But then you're into the wiring, and then you're confirming whether you're getting power to the motor. And again, if it works in zero direction and makes not a sound, you could have a switch or a motor issue, but it's going to take some diagnosis. You got to take some stuff apart to do that.
Jeff, thank you very much for the call. Let's grab one more here before our first break of the afternoon. And Michael's in Olive Bridge. Michael, you're on.
Hey, I called you several months ago, and I haven't been able, when you've been on, I've been driving, so I haven't been able to talk to you.
Yeah.
But several months ago, I called you and told you about a Ford F-150 2019, bought new, and the emergency brake light kept coming on. It didn't have cruise control, and you told me to use the emergency brake, and it might tell the computer that everything was okay. And it worked. It worked perfectly. I just wanted to thank you for that. The truck runs like a top.
Well, that's great. We appreciate the follow-up. We know how hard it is to get back in and give us an update. So thanks for calling back.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. Wow. How about that? A satisfied customer.
Fantastic.
As Basil Fawlty once said in Fawlty Towers, we should have him stuffed. But there you go. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. We'll hit the email bag in a moment, and then more of your calls. Thank you. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is our phone number. Gordon Fricke joins us today to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions. This email from Bob in Poughkeepsie is an interesting one, Gordon. He says, I have a 2010 Jeep Patriot. When I fill it up, it always stalls within 2 minutes, only once, does not stall any other time. Any other ideas?
Well, that is not uncommon, but usually the check engine light is on, and it's usually a partially or stuck open what's called the canister purge valve. And what that does is that valve separates the engine from the gas tank until it's time to draw the vapors in and burn them. So if that valve is stuck open, you go to the gas station, you fill your tank, it pushes a whole bunch of vapor in, and a lot of times you'll start the car up, and it'll either crank forever or it'll start and then partially flood and quit. Maybe once or twice you leave the station, and it doesn't do it again till the next fill-up. That's my guess with him.
Okay. This one's from Ben in Gilderland. Now that we have warmer weather, I have a question about tire pressure. I noticed that my car's tire pressure has increased unexpectedly this week. I can only assume that the rapidly increasing springtime temperatures are to blame, since high temperatures cause gases to expand. Two questions. Is this a common phenomenon, and do I need to do anything about it, like let some air out, or can I ignore it? And that's from Ben in Gilderland.
Yeah, very good question. And we were corrected one time, and I think I named the wrong physicist or scientist, and I think we're talking about Louis Pascal. Was he the guy with pressure in a contained cylinder that increases with temperature?
I don't know. I think we said Bernoulli, and I think we were way off there.
I think it was Pascal, and I bet somebody will try to make sure we did the right thing or said the right guy.
Fair enough.
But anyway, yes, a fairly rapid increase in pressure in temperature is going to cause your tire pressure to also go up. And before we had all these tire pressure monitoring systems in our cars, we never knew it. But if the temperature is going to stay, you know, relatively higher than it has been, you might want to bring them back down to a few pounds over the recommended amount on the door jamb. But we're still in the flip-flop season. I mean, it was 28 degrees this morning, and it's going to be 68 today. That's a pretty wide swing.
Indeed.
So, but anyway, it's a good idea to definitely watch those tire pressures and then adjust them out once things tend to level off.
All right, this one is from Jacob in Cahoes, and then we'll go back to the phones. Jacob says, I have a 2016 Subaru Forester PZEV, and after warming up, it idles incredibly low, almost sounding like it's going to stall. Is this normal for a PZEV? What is hang on. What is a PZEV?
Yeah, that's a great, I don't know what's that, not an acronym, I guess, but yeah, it's called Partial Zero Emissions Vehicle.
Ah, okay, gotcha. All right.
And it's a really catchy thing that Subaru did, and it means that there are times when you're driving that vehicle that it's emitting zero emissions, right? And that sounds great. And what they do is if you're coasting down a hill and your foot is completely off of the accelerator pedal, the computer watches it, and after a certain period of time, it shuts the fuel injectors off, so the engine is not burning a drop of fuel. And then it very craftily watches what you're up to and immediately turns the engine back on. You don't even notice it. Or if you did, you'd have to study it pretty hard. But that's what that stands for. And to go to his initial question, Subarus have a horizontally opposed engine. It's called a boxer engine. It's a flat, like a Volkswagen Beetle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very beautifully balanced engine by design.
Right.
So they idle pretty low. And that's just the way they're able to do that. So people think that Subarus are ready to stall, but they're not.
No problem then. Okay.
Yeah.
Back to the phones we go. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is here, and Eric is in New Windsor. Eric, you're on.
Oh, hello. I have a 1986 Pontiac Fiero, and the left rear wheel is canted, as is the right one as well, but the left is canted more to the, and the wear is to the point where when I checked it the other day, the steel belts actually are visible on the tire. So obviously I need a new tire, but what is the problem that I'm facing with that situation? I'm not sure if you're familiar with that car. It's pretty old.
Yeah, well, you know, we were seeing those to some degree, you know, quite some time ago when they were out there. And that vehicle has a fully adjustable rear axle, so it basically needs, unless there's something worn, it needs an alignment, needs a four-wheel alignment, and that'll straighten it out.
Okay.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you.
Isn't that a mid-engine?
Rear. I think it's behind the axle, yeah.
Oh, I thought that was... Oh, really? Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, pretty sure. Yeah, it's rear engine. It's when you flip up that little tail, you know, that hatch in the back, that old Iron Duke engine in the early years was a four-cylinder, is right there. And then they went to a V6 GT version towards the end of their production, and they were actually a pretty cool, peppy little car. And
now,
that was it.
I mean, rear engines... You know, we had the whole Corvair issue where they would flip up in the air. How did they solve that problem?
Yeah, that whole Corvair thing was due to the swing axle design, which Ralph Nader got all over General Motors about, and they very quickly redesigned that rear axle. That was a short-lived but potentially dangerous situation back then.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551 if you have a car question for Gordon. And let's go to Schenectady. Brian, you're up.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Gordon, I have an 03 Volkswagen GTI, and every now and again I'll get in it and start the car and notice that my tripometer has reset to zero and my clock has reset to 12 o'clock. Only intermittently, no rhyme or reason. Wonder if you have any thoughts.
When that happens, is it harder to start? Is it cranking more slowly, like your battery's half dead?
No, I notice no drain or no, it starts right up.
Yeah. The reason the clock and the trip did that is it lost its either ground or its voltage. The battery went dead or you changed the battery. And those cars of that vintage did have some printed circuit issues in that instrument cluster. And
I see.
To go in there and do all that now, that would be a lot of work and possibly a trouble getting parts. If that's all it does and you can live with it, I don't know if I'd go too crazy, but I'm pretty sure, you know, I worked at a Volkswagen dealership in the late 80s, so we saw a lot of those cars, and I actually had an old, what year's your car again?
03.
I had an older version of a GLI, but I think the problem on those was in the instrument cluster.
I see, okay. Yeah, I thought if it was I thought I might lose all the presets on the radio as well, so that's why I was asking.
Yeah, no, the radio on those is completely separate from the instrument cluster, so it won't affect that.
Brian, thank you very much for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest, 800-348-2551. Now we go to Gordon in Holyoke, and two Gordons at the same time, the world might end. Go ahead.
Hey there, can you hear me all right?
You betcha.
Great. Gordon, nice to meet another Gordon. We're few and far between, so it's always
That's
nice
right.
to run into one. Hey, I have a 2005 Audi A5S 6-speed stick. And there's a bit of a shimmy there has been for some thousands of miles now, I have to admit, in the clutch pedal when you depress the clutch. I'm wondering if it's time to think about putting a new clutch in it.
Yeah. So when you're pressing it down to the floor, you can feel some rumbling in your foot.
Yeah, it'll do it, and then it'll not do it, and then it'll do it again. It's a little bit random.
How many miles around the car, roughly?
437,000.
Wow! No wonder.
They're good cars.
Is it a V8?
No, it's a V6, 3 liter.
V6, yeah. Yeah, I was always liking the looks and sound of the A5 V8s of that era.
Yeah, those are great cars.
Yeah. What you're feeling is the throwout bearing on the pressure plate fingers, and just due to the, now, is that the original clutch? As far as you know, did you buy the car new?
It is. I know it is the original clutch. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Wow.
So that just proves how long a clutch can last with the correct operator,
ah,
which is incredible. But yes, that is your clutch throw-up bearing against the fingers of the pressure plate feeding back to you. Doesn't really mean you have to jump in there and get it changed unless things start getting worse and noisier and start giving you trouble. So I think I would just be aware of it, which you certainly are. But if things start to go sideways,
something that'll kind of fail gradually.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's going to reach the point where you're saying, I don't like this anymore. It's too much. Something's going to go wrong. And then it will be clutch time.
400 and how many thousand miles,
right,
Gordon?
436.
Okay, that car will you will probably fail before that car does. I mean, that's a long time, man. Hey, good luck. Thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Elizabeth in Brimfield, Massachusetts. Elizabeth.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
You bet.
I'm on my cell phone. Okay, I have a 2011 Toyota Prius, and it's been throwing a check engine, and every time my husband checks it, it says cylinder 4 misfire. I took it to one garage because it has 243,000 miles on it. They said, oh, it's the spark plugs. So we got brand new spark plugs. I took it to another garage. They said, oh, no, it's the ignition coils. So we did that. And it didn't make any difference. What has made a difference is usually it goes, was going off at about 300 miles because I was using the odometer thing. And then I started using some a cleaner for the injectors, and it's still going off, but it will go off after about 1,200 miles after we get rid of the code. Mm. So what's my situation is this the cylinder or is it the injectors?
So that's very, very good thinking there. So a misfire can be caused by basically four different things. First is spark, which has been addressed, coil and spark plug.
Right.
Compression of the engine, that's the condition that the cylinders and pistons are in.
Right.
And on a higher mileage engine, that becomes something that's very important to check because it gets very, very commonly overlooked. So engine compression has to be even and adequate. Then there's the fuel injector, which is very difficult to test. There's another factor that we see a lot nowadays, and that is deposits of carbon or debris on the valves that are affecting the airflow to the engine. So the cleaner that you're putting in is the right thing to do. And I would do it again and use a very high quality concentrated formula. We use a brand called Tecron. And if it's
Tecron.
A deposit issue that can be cleaned, this stuff will clean it. If it's beyond cleaning, you'll have a mechanical concern, but if you can stretch that out to a couple thousand miles, maybe it's not the worst thing at that stage of the car's life to live with, you know?
Right, right. Because the car does have a lot of mileage on it,
and
I can't have an engine rebuild.
No.
You know? So I guess we did always use, synthetic oil. We always changed it at 3,000 miles. My husband always took care of that. We always had the filter changed, all that stuff. So we did the best we could with the engines, but it does have a lot of miles on it.
Yeah. I would go with some, maybe a couple of repeat doses of the cleaner. And make sure, and it sounds to me like you're doing everything you should. Make sure you're using top-tier gasoline. High quality top tier gas, and you can look that up on the internet, and you'll find out what dealers sell top tier gas.
All right, Elizabeth, thanks a lot for the call. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Now, we have often mentioned on this show using a cleaner such as Tecron, and you use that and I use that. But, you know, I just thought about this. Can you use it too much?
Yeah, you definitely don't want to overdo it. If you use it too many tankfuls in a row, it will contaminate the oil. And I think it tells you on the bottle, I think it says two consecutive doses are okay. More than that, you need to do an oil change.
Interesting.
So, yeah, that's the only concern there, basically.
Okay, let's grab another call here before the next break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Chris in Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, Gordon, I got a question for you. I was at my dealership the other day, and I asked him a question. When is it a time to trade in my 2016 Jeep for a new one? And the second one is, I took my car to the brushes in Canaan the other day, and I took it to the car wash a second time. Is that safe to do?
Yeah, I think you've called before. I remember the Jeep.
Yes.
The I can be a little sarcastic and say that when you go to a dealer and said when is it time to trade in, they'd say today.
Now, yes, exactly.
So you've got a 16 vehicle. Is it a Grand Cherokee?
It's a limited Grand Cherokee black interior.
Yeah, it's a very nice vehicle, and they're very good, durable vehicles, not a lot of problems with them. So unless you've got tremendous mileage on the vehicle's got a lot more life in it. So I think it's more your preference when you think you'd like another vehicle. Being a 16 vehicle, it's by not even close to being, you know, in bad shape or worn out. So I think that would be up to you. If you say, you know, I don't want to, you know, if things start breaking down or you're putting a lot of money into it or you're just ready for another vehicle. But
that's
not a troublesome vehicle. What was the second question?
Can you wash your car twice a day?
The second question is, I took it to the Canaan Auto Wash twice the other day. And is that good to do?
Well, you can definitely overwash a vehicle. Salespeople's cars that have the coupons at the car wash places, after a while, you'll see the paint being pretty beat to death from all those, brushes and stuff. And so I wouldn't go washing it like mad. Keep it clean, and it might be a good thing to take to a detailer maybe like once a year and get some really good wax on it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wax.
All right.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for the call. It's Cars Today with Gordon Fricke, 800-348-2551, and we'll be right back. Vox Pop, it's Cars Today with Gordon Fricke, 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. All right, Gordon, a few emails here, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from John in Dalton. And John says, I own the Chevy Silverado 1500 LT 2012 V8, about 83,000 miles. Never had any problems. How often or when should I change the transmission fluid, and are there filters which should also be changed? And that's from John in Dalton.
That's a really good question, which tends to get overrun by all the engine oil issues and questions. But so in the owner's manual, Chevrolet will give you normal driving conditions and severe. Severe is for towing, pulling loads, you know, loads of firewood or whatever. And I think in the manual, I think severe duty on those might be every 30,000 miles. And you can, some of them have a drain plug, and you can do a drain and refill, but the traditional maintenance on those truck transmissions was to remove the pan, change the filter, and then you replenish the fluid, and you're back on the road. And that was the preferred method. You can flush them also, but the dealers in Chevrolet still has a filter and fluid change interval. So I think he's at the right mileage regardless of normal or severe duty to get that service done.
This one's from Mark. Mark says, one of my cars is a 2005 Honda Accord. Still has the original alternator. I know that if my alternator fails, it could leave me stuck on the side of the road. Currently testing fine at 14. Do you recommend jumping the gun and just having it replaced? And if not, what can I do to prevent getting stuck on the side of the road? And that's from Mark.
Wow, he must have been stranded with a bad alternator on another vehicle.
Haven't we all?
So, if he's got incredibly high mileage, he could be a candidate for an alternator, but that's not a high failure alternator. It's not like I see those things coming in like crazy needing alternators. There's no maintenance to it. You know, there's nothing you can do to make it last any longer. I don't think I would change it. Everything sounds like it's operating correctly at this point. I wouldn't change it yet.
All right, this one's from Patricia. Patricia says, my poor wheel has hit one too many potholes, and my aluminum rim on the 2013 Ford Edge is cracked. Can these rims be repaired by welding? And if so, is it safe?
Yeah, good question, because we see a lot of that, and it's going to start happening soon with the pothole season, you know?
Yep.
Yes, there are wheel repair shops out there, and they can fix cracks. They weld them, they x-ray them, they true the wheel up, and I've had them done for me, and some of these guys are super great. They do an unbelievably nice job. Some of them will, in addition to fixing the crack or the bend in the wheel, they'll refinish them if the wheel is really in bad shape on the outside. And you can also buy exchange wheels. They've been already refurbished, and you just swap it out and get your new wheel or get your exchange wheel that way a lot quicker.
Final email here, and then back to the phones till the end of the show. This one's from Jim in Saratoga. When the car is cold, and the car is a 2005 Toyota Corolla, or damp, the tach jumps around and the temperature gauge doesn't register. After it warms up, both go back to normal. Is it the instrument cluster or a sensor that is failing? And that is from Jim in Saratoga.
Yeah, good question, but tach jumping and gauge not working until it warms up could definitely be in the cluster. There's circuitry in there that can go open circuit or partial at certain temperatures.
Yeah.
And then when the car warms up, it closes up the gap. Good luck finding it. So I think if he can live with it, I would, if it clears up fairly quickly, I would just let it go until it plain out fails.
Okay, fair enough. Back to the phones with Gordon Fricke, Adrian, and New Paltz. You're on.
Hey, back in the days, I used to take my vehicle to a dealership, and they loved to keep pestering me about a transmission flush. And it was expensive, as I remember, what, a couple $100, $300. Can you recommend something from an auto store, one of these cans of Miracle Magic, Tranny Tree, or whatever? I have a nice Hyundai Entourage. It's got the V6, the minivan, with 170K. And I want to be just like that guy with the 400K on his Audi, right?
Yeah.
So maybe something, you know, I got a local, one of those auto zones or whatever. Any something in a can I could put in every once in a while?
Maybe just
leave it alone. If it ain't broke, don't do nothing. Right.
Yes. I would be careful pouring additives in. What I would do is a drain. And has it been serviced in the vehicle's life, drained and refilled?
I don't think it has. No, because I just go to a good quality shop, and they're very honest. You know, they haven't tried to do anything extra to the thing. So it's with 170K, it probably wouldn't hurt to just drain it and put fresh fluid in it.
Yeah. I wouldn't do a total flush because that could disturb some things in there because of that high mileage. But I believe that car has a drain and refill procedure. And that doesn't shock the transmission. You're only taking out partial amounts of fluid. So I would talk to your shop and ask them about doing a drain and refill. And you could do a couple of those, like if the fluids, if they say this fluid is super dark and a lot of debris in it, you could do a couple of drain and refills over time, you know, so you don't shock the transmission, but you start to gradually get the fluid cleaner.
Okay.
Well, Adrian, that's what I would do.
Thanks for the call. Over to Burlington, Vermont. Hello, Paul. You're on.
Hello, and thank you for having this show today.
You bet.
I hope you can hear me well.
Very well.
Good. Good. Terrific. Earlier in the winter, you had a woman call with a 2020 Honda CR-V, and she was noticing that as she started her car and drove, the temperature gauge dropped. And I experienced that same thing with my 2017 CR-V, which is the same series. And my solution to it was, rather than use the automatic heat adjustment, I adjusted it manually, both temperature-wise and fan speed-wise. And it worked terrific all winter long.
So you're thinking that was in terms of the heater output?
It definitely got cooler. If I used the automatic heater, and I started to drive, and if I went, say I was on a 30-mile road and I went on a 50-mile-an-hour road, it definitely noticeably dropped in temperature and temperature output.
So the gauge, the temperature gauge dropped, and so did the heat.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yep.
She was absolutely correct.
Yep, so you put your heat on manual, and that kind of stabilized it?
Yes.
Okay.
And it took about 20 minutes before that didn't occur. The engine had to be running. I had to be driving. And it took about 20 minutes before the engine finally heated up, and it would not drop.
Yeah. Did your temperature gauge still do the swing, though?
Up and down?
Yeah, your engine temperature gauge?
Yeah, it would drop when I put... Yes, it did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, it absolutely did.
Yeah, and that may be something that may be something to do with the thermostat controlling the engine's temperature. But yeah, keeping your heat on manual kind of covered it up for you.
Okay.
Yeah,
it did, and we're fine. And now my curiosity is I just bought this at the end of August of 20. Will this do the same thing when heating season occurs? But in reverse,
probably not.
It won't cool.
Probably.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's an engine temperature concern rather than heat AC. But I could be wrong. But
okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Be interesting,
Paul,
to keep an eye on it.
And I hope you call again. Thanks. Nice hearing from Burlington. The number is 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And now to Warrensburg, and Eric, you're on.
Hi, guys. My problem is I have a ghost in the car.
Oh, boy.
Can you hear me all right?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. I've got a Toyota Sienna 06, 200,000 miles, but no rust. The thing is perfect in every way. But as soon as it gets cold weather and I start driving it, I'll have a whistling sound. It's like, woo, and sometimes it's even, there'll be two notes, like a harmonic.
Oh, my gosh.
And as soon as the car warms up, it's gone.
Wow.
And it's all summer long, nothing.
You got the Von Trapps under the hood. Good for you. That's great.
It's not RPM. It's MPH that affects the tone.
Does it change with the speed of the fan? Or if I don't know if you've experimented with it, but if you slightly open a window or change the fan speed of the heater?
I have shut everything off, including the engine, and coasted. And I still get this sound between 40 and 55.
Yeah. It's definitely a situation where in the cold weather, things are contracting and it's opening up a tiny, tiny opening, a hole or a crack somewhere between two surfaces, and I got a feeling that it's so related to the temperature that you may never discover what that is unless, you know, there's somebody on the internet that stumbled upon it and shared that information. But I'm sure it's a temperature-related situation where something is expanding and contracting at just that moment.
Yeah, I've replaced the cabin filter, the air filter. I've been all underneath the thing to see if there's anything loose. You know, I just cannot find it.
Is it the original windshield?
Yes.
Because a lot of times a replacement windshield may have a little imperfection in how it got glued in, and you can get wind noises in there. That could happen with the original glass also, but it's hard to determine where the sound is coming from unless you have somebody in the car that can kind of move around and listen at different spots, you know?
Yeah, I did that. A friend of mine actually got in the back because he could hear it. It sounded like it was in the back, and when he got back there, he said it's definitely in the front somewhere.
Yep. Yeah, that happens a lot. Well, if you find out, Eric, call us back. Thank you very much for that one. Sophia in Albany. Sophia, you're on.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm assuming you can hear me. All right. So my question is, I have a 2010 top-of-the-line Toyota Camry with 71,000 miles, which is close to what my age is.
Okay. 71,000?
So
all right.
So we're both senior citizens here.
Yeah.
All right. So my temperature gauge does not operate correctly in the wintertime. In my garage, they just sort of roller eyes. Can that be taken care of?
You're talking about the outside temperature reading?
Yeah, when it says the outside temperature reading, correct.
So what do you discover? When you start the car up in your garage, it still says it's 31 degrees?
Well, I'm trying to remember now. So today it seems to be operating better in the warmer weather.
Yeah.
But when it was cold, it was not correctly doing it. So if it was, I don't know, let's say it was saying like 40 degrees and it was 20.
Yeah.
It was off by a fair amount. Is that something that can be addressed or should I just ignore it?
Well, so what these vehicles will do is, so the temperature is not going wildly up and down. Let's say you're driving down the road at 50 and you hit a warm spot near a lake or whatever. It doesn't shoot that temperature immediately up. It's very slow to react. So when you pull in, let's say you pull in your garage at night and it's 15 above zero. When you start the car up the next morning or hours later, it's going to remember that last temperature or something lower than it really is.
Okay.
And I've experienced this with a bunch of cars because you'll start the car. Like I'll bring a car inside from the shop, work on it for 2 hours, start the car up, and the temperature display says it's still 31 degrees and it's been in a 70-degree shop for 3 hours. I have a feeling it's that super, super slow delay that you're experiencing.
Okay.
And to answer your question, can it be remedied? The only thing that you can really do that's easy and quick is to replace the temperature probe itself, which is outside the car in front of the radiator. That's pretty easy to do. But it may not make any difference.
Okay. All right. And then I have a ding in my left front panel there, I guess. Somebody had backed into me. If I were to trade the car in, should I get that repaired in advance?
Well, it depends how bad the ding is. And there are some paintless dent repair guys that travel and or have places where you can bring the car in. And they can do dent repairs without paint.
Okay, I think I misspoke. It's not really so much a dent, is that the panel itself sort of has popped out from where the seam is, where it would otherwise be joined. So I've taken it to like Kohl's, and they could put it in for a short period of time, and then it would pop out again. So the whole panel would have to be replaced.
I see. Yeah. Well, it depends on when you trade it and how drastically that's going to reduce your trade. It may cost you more to fix it than they're going to take off on the car, you know.
Well, Sophia, thank you very much. We're almost done here. We have about 1 minute, and I see that Greg in Utica has been waiting a very long time. Greg, you got a minute here. Go ahead.
Okay, guys, 2014 Ram, 1500. On a daily basis, the truck will self-lock. It'll lock me out. With the keys in it or the keys out of it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Gordon, you're on.
Yeah, I have been locked out of a lot of vehicles. Well, I just take every car we bring in the shop, we roll the window down. But that is definitely a issue with your security system, with your key fobs and your remotes and all that. It's possible that Chrysler or Dodge has a reflash available to calm that down. I would call a dealer and ask them if there's a remedy for that they're aware of. It might be a reflash of the computer that operates the locks. I would start there.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Hey, Greg, thanks a lot. Now, Gordon Fricke, thank you very much, sir, for being here. And I guess we'll see you next month, and pothole season will be in full flower by then.
Yes, and maybe we'll have more oil questions by then.
Yeah, you know, possibly. We'll see. I got a feeling that probably we'll have an oil change or two to talk about. Hey, man, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Support comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, providing design, production, and project management for trade shows, museum exhibits, special events, and custom interiors. Your partner for a custom experience, EmpireExhibits.com. Ambrose Electric Standby Power, an electrical contractor providing sales service and installation of residential and commercial Generac automatic standby generators, serving the Greater Capital District for over 40 years. AmbroseLEC.com. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. And Curtis Lumber, offering virtual bathroom design services featuring Merillat cabinets and Cambria quartz countertops. Consultations available, CurtisLumber.com. Once again, thanks to the great Gordon Fricke for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for calling. I apologize if we didn't get to your calls. Gordon's a popular guest, and he will be back soon. Thanks to James Farrison for screening the calls and Zach Malloy at the controls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh, this is exciting. Financial advice is always thrill-packed, and Bob Canterbury will be here, so buckle down and get ready for action. That's tomorrow at 2. Stand by for the book show.